Kate O'Toole with you on 105.7 ABC Darwin. Now, what will our digital future look like? When you think about all the changes in the last 10 years, when you think about even just the advances in mobile phone technology, for example, it's hard to imagine what the next 10 years will bring. But one thing for certain is you'll be hearing a lot more about the cloud. Cloud computing is the current buzz, and Apple's launched their iCloud service this week in the States. Apple's been driving trends in phones and tablets. So is this new product something that's going to be adopted in a similar way by other companies? Better figure out what it actually is first. Still Garion is freelance writer and commentator on technology and the internet. Still, thanks for speaking to us today.
Pleasure, Kate.
Now, what is the cloud?
Well, the cloud is pretty much, I mean, a simple answer is it's all of the bits of the internet that you don't control. Which is pretty much all of it.
Yeah, which is everything except for what you're seeing on your screen at the, well, I guess,
or
control.
Or physically have, yes, in your hand, or physically have on your desk or on your lap or whatever.
Yep.
But in terms of how that affects where your data is, it means instead of primarily you keep all your stuff on your computer, which is, you know, I guess what most people do now. You write something in a word processor, you save it to your computer. You have music, it's kept on your computer, whatever it might be. With the cloud approach, all of your stuff is kept out on the internet by someone else. And your device, your computer, your smartphone, your tablet, whatever it might be, connects over the internet to wherever it is that your stuff is, and accesses it that way, which means a couple of things. One is that all that stuff, in theory, about remembering to back up your data, remembering to keep it secure, all of that stuff, which is the hard stuff that we always forget to do, someone else is taking care of that for you. The other supposed advantage is that it doesn't matter what device you have. You might be working from home on a desktop computer and working on all your stuff, and then you're out on the road on a smartphone. That smartphone can still access all your stuff. You lose your smartphone, so you pop into an internet cafe and use the computer there, and that has access to all your stuff. So it doesn't matter what device you use, wherever you are on the internet, on the planet, you can still get access to your stuff. Well, that's the selling point. That's the good side of things.
And how is, we will talk about the bad side as well, because there's definitely risks here, but how is, just bearing in mind that Apple has been good at creating brands around technology, how are they using this concept in their iCloud idea?
In a way, what Apple's doing is not especially new. Other players already have stuff where you can keep all your things out in the cloud. And Google, for example, if anyone uses a Google Gmail account, or anyone uses Microsoft's Hotmail or Livemail, that's already in the cloud. You're already using your cloud. Your email is out there in the cloud. It's not on your computer. So both of those companies and others also have ways of storing your documents out in your cloud. So Apple's not doing anything new there. They've just come up with a nice new, you know, nifty bit of branding for it. The one thing that's different about Apple's product is that they've integrated this with their iTunes music store. And an important part of Apple's revenue is all that music stuff and the movies and so on. And what they seem to have done here is come up with a good way of integrating all that so that, you know, you're on your laptop computer, you download or buy a few songs or movies to watch, and then that is then automatically available on your iPhone, your iPod, or whatever other devices you have. So that's the one big thing that Apple have done that's a little bit different.
And there is there's a bit of concern about that too. They've got this iTunes Match system where if you are uploading all your stuff to their cloud, it can sort of recognise the songs that you've got, even if they've been downloaded illegally, and give you kind of an identical copy that is that doesn't basically have stolen stamped across it. So some music industry types have been a bit critical that this is essentially legitimising music piracy.
Well, they always say that, and I must admit I'm not personally a big fan of the way the music industry behaves in this regard. It used to be the fact that if you bought a bit of music on vinyl and then decided to record that onto a cassette so you could listen in a car. Is there anyone under the age of 150 listening, remembering what cassettes are? You know, but that was pretty much within your rights. You paid for the right to listen to that piece of music, and as long as you, while you were listening in the car on the cassette, you didn't have someone else simultaneously listening at home on vinyl, you were within your rights to do so. And the music industry, I should call it the music distribution industry, because it's all about distributing the music, not about actually being the musicians creating it. But they want you to effectively buy the music again for each new device or each new technology that you want to that you want to use to listen to it, because that's really what their business depends upon. And I think we need to remember when we look at the music industry that if you buy, I don't know, an album on a CD for $20, let's pick a number out of the air, the artists, the people who actually make the music, only get about a dollar of that. You know, $19 in there is all about supporting this industry that distributes the music to you, and that's what they're really worried about defending.
But isn't there, I mean, the idea that you can have a legitimate copy of music that you might have originally downloaded illegally, hosted by Apple, isn't that kind of a legitimate concern that you're basically able to transfer an illegitimate product into a legitimate product for, they're talking about a nominal price for a year, and it could be, you know, 1,000 pieces of music?
Well, that's one way of looking at it, but the other way of looking at it is that Apple is just merely providing a storage space. So it's a bit like going to one of those self-storage places, hiring one of the big boxes to store your stuff in. It's not up to the self-storage place to decide whether the telly you're putting in there was stolen or not.
Now, the bigger issue probably is security, given what we've seen with the Sony PlayStation hack. Can we trust these companies to keep our information safe?
And they'll say yes and I'll say no. That's the short answer. You know, their selling point is that, hey, this security stuff on your computer, you know, how do you know your antivirus software is up to date? How do you know you're not going to fall for some trick and have the hackers get into your computer? And, you know, as I said before, we've said this on the program before, Kate, haven't we? You've got your backups up to date at home, haven't you?
I don't.
Next question.
Am sort of in a cloud.
Yeah, okay. Look, the selling point is that once you put all your data into a big, professionally run data center, they can hire a big professional security team, and they will do a better job than you and I ever possibly could. Now, that, in a sense, is true. But the other side of the coin is once you have millions of people storing their data in the one place or with the one company, that's an incredibly attractive target for hackers, and that's exactly what happened in the Sony case. We had an organisation called Lulfic who really are out to prove that many of the big players are not as secure as they'd like you to have you believe. And that's the thing. It's, you know, when you have millions of people in the one spot and it gets hacked, millions of people are affected.
So does that mean that we need to be careful about what we store on either the Apple version of this or the Google version of, you know, Google Docs or the Yahoo version or the Hotmail version? We have to be careful about what you put in those documents?
Well, I mean, we can say that, but then when it comes down to it, you've got to store your life somewhere. And no matter whether you use somewhere out on the cloud or your home computer, you're still storing your personal email. You still have a computer through which you do your internet banking and so on. So it's really hard to judge. And you can hear it in my voice, I'm sure. I'm going, gee, I store some things out on the cloud. I store other things on my local computer. But then that means if that gets stolen, I'm stuffed. The big question at the moment is, as you say, can we trust the big players? And at the moment, at least in Australia, there is no specific legal requirement for them to keep stuff secure. Interestingly enough, in Australia, if they have a security incident and the bad guys get hold of your personal data, they don't even have to tell us that it's happened.
Which is a bit outrageous.
It is a bit outrageous, and the information security world has been saying, hey, can we have laws like they have in many parts of the United States that require them to tell us, at least they have to tell us what happened so that we can take corrective action. Now, so far, the Australian government has said, yes, we'd like you to do that. We'd like you to tell people when things go wrong. And if you don't do it, if you don't be good boys and girls out there in the industry, we might have to step in and regulate. And there's some of us, me included, who think, well, the time has kind of come. We've seen enough problems, even in the last couple of years, to say, hey, you guys aren't getting it right. You really aren't keeping people's stuff as safe as it could be.
We'll just have to, I guess that's, there's got to be a time when it gets a little bit more regulated here, I would think. You're listening to 105.7 ABC Darwin. Still Gerrion is with us. He's a freelance writer and a commentator on technology and the internet. We've been talking about our digital future and the cloud that we've kind of had for the last 10 years or so, but now has a name, and what that's going to mean for our future with internet security and all of that stuff. Still, Peter in Virginia sent in a text wondering if cloud computing will still work on slow internet speeds. He's got ADSL1, lots of people in Virginia, he says, still, and the rural area still on dial-up. Can you expect to be able to operate in a cloudy future on dial-up?
I would not want to do that, no. It'll be incredibly slow and clunky to use, and all of this is based on the idea of everyone having decent high-speed broadband. That's part of one of the thrusts of the national broadband network is to bring these kinds of speeds, which, I'm standing right here in relatively central Sydney at the moment, works fine here. I would not want to try this stuff on dial-up, and it really can't, because everything you try and do, every time you want to access a document, it's not coming straight off your own computer, which is, on your computer and very fast. It's got to be pulled down over the internet. So,
and it could actually be coming from where, like California or something?
It could be coming. Well, that's the thing about the cloud. Part of the point is you shouldn't even have to know where it is. Some cloud providers have data centers in Australia, but typically we're looking California or we're looking Singapore as the two closest ones to Australia if they haven't got one here.
Still, Gerrion, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
My pleasure, Kate. Anytime.
Still, Gerrion is a freelance writer and commentator on technology and the internet, letting us know exactly what the cloud is and how it could change the way we compute in future, as we've heard Apple joining the market this week, launching their iCloud service in the United States. You're listening to 105.7 ABC Darwin, Kate O'Toole with you, and Smithy will be in very shortly.